Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of Behind Growth Scenes, video podcasts featuring industry leaders. In this show, we invite top marketers and experts to give you a behind-the-scenes look at the ideas and strategies that organizations are using to succeed in today's hyper-competitive world. Today, we are in conversation with Brian Massey, who is the founder of Conversion Sciences and also has decades of industry experience. In this episode, Brian explains how gathering data during design can increase conversions and boost ROI. This episode was originally recorded as a webinar and is now being presented as a video podcast. During the episode, Brian therefore refers to a presentation while explaining certain ideas. Also, hit the follow button so that you never miss out on an episode from Behind Growth Scenes. So without any further delay, let's get right into this episode and learn how and why you should design a data-driven landing page.
So back in November of 2012, this is what the website finish line looked like. Now, this was a major brand online and offline for sports apparel. And on the very next day, November 19th, this is what it looked like. They had completely reimagined the site, completely changed the brand presentation, and they were all obviously very excited about this, that this was going to fundamentally change the online fortunes of the business. Unfortunately, that isn't what happened. And within just a few weeks, the sales had dropped more than $3 million, and this was going into the holiday season. So what happened here? What happened that a really well-funded redesign, a smart agency, executives that knew their customers could get all the way to launch without realizing that they were about to shoot themselves in the foot? Well, let me compare this with another business. This is Galeson.com. They sell construction, manufacturing, essentially work apparel to consumers and to other businesses. And we've been working with them for a long time. We've been optimizing the site using Visual Website Optimizer for over 4 years with them. And they knew that they needed to update the website to support larger screens and also to make this version of the site responsive. Until this point, they'd had a separate mobile site. So we were obviously a little bit concerned that we would change everything in the design and it would take away the wins that we had fought for over the previous 4 years. The redesign was similar, but really did open the site up. It was had a better visual hierarchy. It worked better with larger and smaller screens. So what we did was we decided to test it. We implemented the entire website redesign in VWO and ran an A-B test. So half the traffic was seeing the original site, half the traffic was seeing the redesigned site. We call this redesign insurance. It's really all we wanted to do was make sure that we weren't reducing the conversion rate by subtly changing things that made it harder for people to buy. All of the pages changes. So the category pages were redesigned. The product pages were all redesigned. And what did we find out? Well, we don't have to launch and pray anymore. And what we found out was our redesign actually showed us a 13% increase in revenue per visitor. Interestingly enough, the number of transactions didn't change, but the average order value went up. Now, that's very interesting. But this was a statistically significant test, so we have high confidence in the data. This is the way design should be done. Now, you don't have to go all in and test an entire redesign to get insurance on that. I'm going to show you how you can step your way into design using data along the way. The thing that we're working against here is we think certain things will work. I mean, we build sites, we build pages very logically, but the audience really wants to find a different path. Now, if we take this metaphor, we can say, well, of course they want to go to the shorter direction. But as you start to understand your visitors, you realize, well, actually, maybe it's because runners prefer to run on soft grass as opposed to hard cement. Or maybe they were taking this other path because it was shadier and they don't want to walk in the sun. So just assuming that the shortest path is the best path is not the best answer. We want to do the research to find out what the true reason was for the, in this case, walkers and runners to carve their own path through the trees. Now, the problem is we have 3 pounds of seething biases between our ears. Our brains are designed to take shortcuts. We want to find the quickest way to process information. What this does is it allows us to rely on stereotypes. It allows us to rely on our own experiences and making decisions on what we should design, what's good, what's bad. And our experiences are often not the same as our visitors. So this is why we use science. It keeps us from using these shortcuts, stereotypes, etc. Now, one of the problems is that design is always, it's very visual, it's very sexy. Everyone's really focused on the design. And as a result, our data gets short shrift. So I'm going to make the point here that you need to become an experimenter. You need to provide the data that keeps people from focusing completely on how the site looks and start looking at how visitors really want to interact with your brand, either as a landing page, the website, even your ads. The job of an experimenter is really different from the job of a designer. An experimenter's job is to take an idea. This would be a redesign idea. It could be one component that would go on a page. It can be copy. It can be images. And then find a way to prove that that idea is wrong. And if you can't find data that proves your idea is wrong, then you probably have a winner there. But that's what an A-B test is. We actually are testing the null hypothesis, the opposite of what we think is going to work, to prove that the null hypothesis is false, and thus that all we're left with is that the new design is probably a better design if we have a winner. Now, the traditional design process looks something like this. You do a lot of research on the front end, you do marketing studies, you do focus groups, you do panels, you interview customers, and then you hand that information off to the design development team, and they make thousands of assumptions about how their design should meet the needs that they found in that research. And you really don't know how good a job they did until after lunch. This is what happened at Finish Line. So the blue area indicates the amount of time that you're spent researching. The new way to design, well, and of course, this tends to lean towards people looking at best practices and all of those biases that sit in our brains. The modern way of designing and redesigning is this. There's a whole lot more blue here. There's a whole lot more user intelligence, analytics, market research going into the process. We start off with the creative brief and do pretty much the same sort of research we would do in the old way. But then as we go through and we talk about positioning and the copy that's going to hit that positioning or that value proposition, we can test that. When we decide what images we want to include to support that, we can test that. When we have a layout, we can go through and we can test that with user testing. So that by the time we launch, we have a very strong idea supported by data that our design is going to be successful. And then we can begin optimizing to make it even better. This is the new way to design. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to take us through the process of building a landing page. And I'm going to show you at each step of the way exactly how you can collect some data that will support your design decisions, your copy decisions, your choice of images. Now, when I'm talking about a landing page, I'm talking about a very specific kind of page, not just the entry page for customers. A landing page only has two jobs. The first job is to keep the promise that was made in a link, in an ad, in a social media post, or in an email. Understanding what your visitors are expecting when they get there is one of the powers of the landing page. If you don't know what promise is bringing people to the page, you're not building a landing page, you're building something else. You're building a home page or an informational page. So if you don't know what's bringing people, it's not a landing page. That's the first job of a landing page, is to keep the promise. The second job of a landing page is to get the visitor to make a choice. Let them know that they are being asked to make a choice. If you're putting anything on the landing page that doesn't support that visitor's choice, you're building something else. A lot of times we'll have a landing page for instance, a webinar, a free report, and we'll spend a lot of the copy talking about how wonderful the products are and what they do. That's not what this landing page is about. It's about that piece of content, or it's about that webinar. So the only reason to put that sort of information on there is if you're specifically trying to build credibility with the visitor. So when we start a landing page, we want to start with a pure solution of web page. We like to start with the corporate template, which has all of the navigation and sidebar stuff. Nope, start pure. We're going to start with just a blank page. And we're going to mix in a couple of elements. We're going to mix in the offer that the page has, this landing page. Now, the offer should match the promise made in the ad, the link, the email, et cetera. And we're going to mix in some form. Now, a form is typical, one of the most common ways to take action on a digital landing page. So when you mix these together, you get a complete landing page. It has an offer, it has a form, a way to take action. There it is. Any questions? Well, okay. Admittedly, submit is not a very good offer. So we've got to start drilling down on how we talk about our offer. And this is the first place you're going to be able to apply some data. Fortunately, the data that you have is might already be laying around. You don't need to go and do a test or any of the other things that we're going to be looking at. A/B testing is the last thing you do. We want to work our way towards that. So I would go to my PPC people and I would say, hey, can you pull the ads for the last 3 months, 6 months, whatever an appropriate amount of time is, and begin to evaluate what words and what ads and what offers are really doing a good job on the ad side. And you're going to use your natural ability to understand data, because this will not be a surprise to you. But we find here's an ad with here's an ad with a 2.8% conversion rate. Well, that's the best one of the group, but it's a small sample size, only 37 clicks. So I don't have a lot of confidence in that number. Looking at some of these larger sample sizes, though, we see there's a 1.9% conversion rate with 843 interactions. So I would tend to believe that this might be the best copy that we would lead with as our landing page headline, as opposed to half price dollar bills or the others. So you see how just some simple data that's already there can really help us understand what words to use in our offers on our landing pages. I did this with email. So we publish a weekly email that has what's new on the blog. And I was curious which of those emails and blog titles, blog topics, had the highest click rate. So I sorted these by click rate. Went back about 6 months here. And look at this: writing, copywriting, persuasion, value proposition, tagline, persuade people. My audience is really excited about the words that people use to convert. So we created a lead magnet that is performing very well for us, and you're welcome to go. I'm actually pretty proud of this particular lead magnet. Go to conversei.com/copyhacks and get yourself a copy of that. Other sources that you can use with existing data: read your product reviews, read through your live chat transcripts and find out what the key themes are about what people are asking about. These are things that are missing from the existing pages. Read your customer surveys, your marketing studies. If you have personas, there are great ideas in all of those things that you can use to influence how you design your landing pages. So continuing our little example of the mint, let's assume that the US Mint is selling dollar bills for half off. Sounds like a crazy offer, but you all have great offers. You have great products and services at the right price that save time, save money, deliver value, and you still have trouble converting. The Mint would have the same problem. We're going to assume that a search ad is driving traffic to this landing page. So discounted dollar bills, 50% off new US dollars from the leading reseller. And we use that headline, get US dollars 50% off. Click here. Fantastic. But clicking here doesn't do anything for the visitor. It doesn't do anything for your business. So maybe we should collect an email address, and then we can begin using email to market to those subscribers. It's the internet, though. Why don't we go ahead and get a credit card number? Or better yet, we could ask for a friend's credit card number. That would probably have a really high conversion rate, right? Well, the problem is that when we ask for a credit card, we have to ask for a lot more stuff. We need to know how much they want. We need to know what their credit card number is, as well as their name, address, the CVV on the back of it. So we're introducing a contamination in our pure reaction. It's abandonment. People will begin to abandon because we're asking too much personal information. And we give abandon the same symbol as the periodic table element argon, because when someone abandons your landing page, they are gone. So we want to get rid of the abandonment. And this is typically where we'll turn to customer research and our copywriter. And we say, hey, we've got a great offer here. Can you help us build the value with some copy? Maybe handle some initial objections. And a copywriter should say, absolutely. So we've got to find the right mix of copy and the images that support it. As an example, here are 8 headlines that all keep the promise made in the ad, but they'll convert at very different levels for your audience. Which one of these is the best? Double your money instantly. We saw that 50% off US dollar bills was working in our ads, but maybe something a little bit crazy would work as well. So when we have this issue, we can turn to some user testing. So I want to talk about what's called a 5-second test. 5-second test shows the visitor some creative, a mock-up of your landing page or page that you're testing for 5 seconds, and then you get to ask a series of questions after that. So you want to experience it? Ready? Here we go. All right, that was 5 seconds. Now, the questions I would ask you is, what is this company, what does this business do? Did this business seem credible to you? If you wanted to take action, what would you have clicked on? Can you remember any of the details? And if you do this over for a series of different designs, you'll begin to understand which one helps the visitor understand what your business is about, if it's credible, if you're communicating the call to action clearly, et cetera. So you can have a number of different combinations, in this case, combinations of headlines and images, and you can test them ahead of time, essentially A/B testing them, but using the panel of people that are coming through Usability Hub. Another great example of a test is called the click test, and this is where you put up a piece of content and you ask the visitor to click on the thing you're trying to test. This company is an insurance company. They were really interested in whether or not people could find the roadside assistance button on their website. So they ran the 5-second test. It tracks where the visitor clicks and how long it takes for the visitor on average to find that button. This was not good. 20 seconds, that's kind of a long time. So they redesigned the page. You can see roadside assistance is here. And you might think, uh-oh, are we making the same mistake Frontline made? Just crazy redesign? Well, so they ran it through the click test again, and sure enough, everybody was finding it, but it was only taking 5 seconds. So they slashed by a fourth the time it took to find that link. You can do the same thing to make sure that your calls to action are being seen. So the copywriter comes back with some copy. They say, well, everybody knows what a dollar bill is. We don't have to explain that. We just want to build some trust around this. So we're starting to get a more traditional looking landing page. And we might want to add some trust symbols to it. Our logo, for instance, our customers, any associations you're a member of, anything that will continue to build that trust. Even the credit card symbols can build trust. You're essentially borrowing trust from the big banks. Now we can invite the designer in. We've got the copy body, we've got all of these things laid out, defined, but we need to lay them out so that we can continue testing our layout process. And the designer is going to come back with something like this. So, you know, the designers like to design beautiful things. We like to see beautiful things, but we've lost the product image. There's no product image. And I don't know who knows how to fill. I mean, people are not naturally going to be drawn to fill out teal form fields. I mean, they're white or light gray. So this is not really accomplishing what we want. And we've got a little bit of that finish line thing going on here. But if we want to give the designer some feedback, we can use something like eye tracking. You can go to a company like Sticky.ai. They will bring 25, 50, or 100 people to look at your creative, and they'll develop a report like this, where you can see where on the page people are viewing. Now, this is kind of high end. This would be for your most important pages, but it can be very effective. Comparing Lyft to Uber, which one of these pages does the best job? Well, according to an eye tracking study, Lyft is doing a better job with their call to action right in the middle. 83% of the visitors are seeing that, as opposed to just 58% seeing Uber's call to action in the lower right corner. So this is pretty good feedback for your designer. And they may come back with something a little bit more mundane, but more effective. So we do have the product in there. We've got these call to actions. We've screened them back here so they don't compete. It is completely clear that we are asking the visitors to do something. This form really is the conversion beacon. And so we've got the logo and everything there. So this is, while less sexy, is going to be a more effective landing page. So at this point, we can launch and know. We've done some initial research on how this page is going to work. We've collected data on our design, on our copy, on our layout, and we can launch it and know. But this is where we get to collect this amazing behavioral data. So analytics, of course, will tell us how many people are coming and how they're converting. Fantastic. But also there's some tools that we can use, user intelligence tools. So heat map reports can be really, really helpful. Now, is there anyone here who doesn't know which of these pages has a scroll problem? If you've never seen a scroll report like this, I don't have to explain it to you. These dark blue areas indicate fewer people seeing the page, and the cutoff is really high. So this page has a bit of a problem. You can go in and see what is the copy in this area causing, or what is it about it that is causing it people to drop off? They're not seeing what they expected to see, as opposed to this one where people are scrolling all the way down to see all of those fantastic offers. And we can look at the click report. So this tells us where people are clicking on the page. This is a resort on Hawaii. They are a golf resort. So they figured on their feet, on their specials page, they should put the golf stuff at the top. Well, when we go in and look at the heat map report, we find that free breakfast is far and away the most clicked item. It sounds strange, but Marriott has figured that out. The hotel chain Marriott offers free breakfast. And it's one of the reasons I tend to choose Marriott. I mean, we're talking about 19 clicks on golf versus 176 clicks on free breakfast. Maybe we should move that one up. The same thing applies to form analysis. We can see where the stop fields are. Which fields are people spending the most time on? Which people are abandoning the form? Which fields? And it, you know, this is going to be things like mobile phone number. In this case, it's insurance information and doctor information. But you really need to understand where people are getting tripped up. Then you can hatch surveys where you maybe break the form up into pieces or eliminate any of those stop fields that you really don't need. We're also big fans of thank you page surveys. So when someone comes to your site and actually finishes converting, so they either sign up as a lead or they purchase on an e-commerce site, on the thank you page or the receipt page, ask a simple question. What almost kept you from requesting information today? Or what almost kept you from buying today? Now, it sounds very negative, but you specifically want to ask them, what was it that kept you from, almost kept you from acting? That's someone who's been through the process, you're asking for feedback at the end, and you're going to have a high completion rate because of something called the endowment effect. Once somebody has chosen you, bought from you, or decided to complete your form, they will endow you with a certain higher level of trust. So you get a much higher completion rate on the thank you page than you would if you had this sort of a query like, what's troubling you about our website on any of the pages before they've converted. We were able to use this on a site called Automattic. This is a product that plugs into your car and connects your phone to your car's computer. So you can see how fast you're going, how fast you're slowing down, you know, if you're braking too hard, if you're accelerating too fast, if there's a problem with the car, it will let you know what those codes are. So it deciphers the engine light for you. It does a lot of great things, helps you find the car. What we found out, though, was that their new Pro product was not selling well. Everybody was choosing the Lite product. And this was the page on which we explained the difference in the features. Now, the Pro was a much better product, and it was much more profitable. So we asked them, what made you choose Lite instead of Pro if they bought that Lite version? And we got a lot of answers very quickly. In general, we found that this was kind of, I don't think I need crash alert. I have apps that track where I park. I don't never need it. I don't know what live vehicle tracking means. I don't know what event-based apps means. So we weren't clearly communicating the value of this product. So we have a hypothesis here. Can we simplify the choice? This is where a good A/B test will be very helpful. So we aren't necessarily able to capture this data in any other way. An A/B test is the best way to set this up. And so we took the control, which was the original list of the features, and we just simplified it down to the main things that made a difference. And sure enough, we saw a 13% increase in the conversion rate, and more people were buying the more expensive Automattic Pro. This is exactly what we wanted. So this is the beauty of A/B testing. So we're reducing risk during design, not after launch. And Visual Website Optimizer provides the entire suite of tools that you would need to accomplish this. And as a postscript, so on December 15th, Finish Line rolled back to their original site. They were smart enough to keep the original site on a server in case something went terribly wrong. Of course, they were like, what could go wrong, right? Well, they were able to roll it back and save Christmas for the company. But if you go back and look at their site now, it's quite different. It's quite different from that. Do you think that the same thing happened, that they redesigned this and they had a disaster? I don't think so, because if you snoop on them, you see that they have heat map reporting tools on the site, they have session recording tools on the site, they have A/B testing software on the site, they have three kinds of analytics, they have Tag Manager. These are the signs of a mature, data-driven design culture, and I suspect that this new page is probably performing very, very well for them. So my question for you is this: if you have Visual Website Optimizer, you have a whole suite of tools that allow you to plug in at almost any time. What experiment are you going to do next week? What landing page are you working on that you could take a little bit of time and put in front of a usability hub or a Helio panel to see if people are getting what you're trying to communicate? This is a map of kind of how we use different tools across the plane, beginning at, you know, positioning and initial copy. We're looking at Facebook ads. We're looking at marketing automation software. You know, you saw my analysis of email, live chat transcripts, ratings and reviews, doing surveys with Qualaroo or SurveyMonkey. Then as we begin to work our copy and images and layout, we can use things like Usability Hub and Helio. When we have prototypes, we can take people through using user testing and Validately. But once we get to that launch phase, Visual Website Optimizer is providing this rich body of user intelligence behavioral data that is just the best that we can possibly collect. And you can do this. I mean, I know you can do this because we've trained hundreds of people to do this. These are our customers and our partners, and they're, you know, talking Russian literature majors, people with just high school education. All of them are able to understand the basics of the data and to use these tools to deliver designs that work, and they know it before they actually end up launching.
Thank you, Brian, for these fantastic insights about data-driven design. Also, thank you, dear listener, for sticking with us throughout this episode. We hope you enjoyed it, and we're also keen to see how you implement the ideas shared by Brian. Share this episode with someone who might find it useful and check out the other interesting conversations that we've had with industry experts. Don't forget to hit the follow button so that you never miss out on an episode from Behind Growth Scenes. That's all for this one. See you in the next episode. Until then, goodbye, take care, and always be testing.